A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You're walking through the old city. It's about 2 in the afternoon in July. The stone walls are radiating heat, and you've got maybe 8 seconds before the next vendor grabs your attention. And then you hear it. Some guy at a juice stall just rattling off. Pomegranate juice, orange juice, avocado juice, kiwi juice, like he's reading a script at double speed. And you, a rational adult who wasn't thinking about juice at all, suddenly find yourself standing there going, "Wait! Do I want a kiwi juice?"
Daniel sent us this one. He's been watching the Jerusalem market vendors do their thing and noticed something specific. The juice stall guys, they don't yell fruit juices for sale. They list rapid fire. Pomegranate, orange, avocado, kiwi, one after another. No pause, no pitch, just the list. And Daniel noticed that this triggers a weird mental response. You hear the list and your brain does an inventory check. Wait, do I need any of those things? In a way that fruit juices for sale never would. He wants to know what's going on psychologically, and then he wants to know how to apply it. Can you put this on a website? In a client pitch? He even half-joked about auto-playing an audio loop on a professional services site. So today we're going to unpack why that specific listing works, what psychology it's exploiting, and how you can ethically weaponize it in your own sales context.
And I love this question because it's one of those things where the technique is so old it predates written records, but the mechanism is genuinely fascinating once you dig into it.
So let's start by understanding why that specific listing works. What's actually happening in the listener's brain?
The core puzzle hears this. You hear fruit juices for sale, and your brain goes, category, known, dismiss. You hear pomegranate juice, orange juice, avocado juice, kiwi juice, and suddenly your brain is running 4 separate evaluations. Same product category, completely different cognitive response.
Which is weird if you think about it. The information content is technically the same. Fruit juices is just a compressed version of the list.
But that compression is exactly what lets your brain skip the work. And skipping the work is what your brain wants to do. It's lazy in a very specific, well-documented way. The term you'll see in the literature is the availability heuristic. Basically, things that come to mind easily feel more important or relevant. But I think what's actually happening here is more specific than that. The research points to something called the specific alternatives effect.
Specific alternatives effect.
Yeah. The finding is that when you present someone with concrete, specific options rather than a category label, you force their brain to evaluate each option individually against their personal needs. A category gets processed as a single unit, fruit juice, not relevant right now, and dismissed. But 4 specific juices? Each one triggers its own micro-evaluation.
So it's not just that the list is more vivid, it's that the list won't let you dismiss the whole thing at once.
And this connects to something deeper about how we process information. Your brain has 2 basic modes for handling incoming stimuli, heuristic processing and systematic processing. Heuristic is the shortcut mode. Fruit juices hits the shortcut, gets categorized, gets dismissed. Systematic processing is what kicks in when something doesn't fit neatly into a pre-existing category. A rapid-fire list of specific items? That doesn't fit neatly. Your brain has to switch modes.
And the rapid-fire part matters here too, doesn't it? If the guy said pomegranate juice, and then paused for 5 seconds, and then said orange juice, you'd have time to dismiss each one individually.
That's the third mechanism, and it's maybe the most counterintuitive one. The speed creates cognitive load. Your brain is forced into rapid evaluation mode, and that actually prevents you from applying your usual "I'm not interested" filter. By the time you've processed pomegranate and started to form the thought "not interested," the word "orange" has already landed, and then "avocado," and then "kiwi." Your dismissal reflex can't keep up.
So the pace jams the filter.
The pace jams the filter. That's a good way to put it. And here's the thing. The vendors didn't read about cognitive load theory. They figured this out through trial and error over, what, centuries of doing this. 4 to 5 items, distinct flavors, repeated every few minutes. That's the optimized formula.
You mentioned 4 to 5 items being the sweet spot. What happens if they list 12?
Then you get cognitive overload, and the listener tunes out completely. There's good research on this from the Paradox of Choice literature. 3 to 5 options is where decision-making works best. More than 7, and people start experiencing choice paralysis. The brain just shuts down the evaluation process. The Jerusalem vendors landed on 4 or 5 through pure market pressure. If you list 12 juices, you sell fewer juices. The market is a brutal research lab.
It's the world's least ethical A/B test, and it's been running for 1,000 years.
And it produced a robust finding. Let me walk through what's actually happening step by step when you hear that juice list. Step 1, pomegranate juice, hits your ears. Your brain starts a micro-evaluation. Do I want pomegranate? It accesses your memory of pomegranate flavor, your current thirst level, maybe a recent experience. Step 2, before that evaluation completes, orange juice lands. New evaluation begins. Step 3, avocado juice. Now, for a lot of people, this is the one where the evaluation pauses. Avocado juice is unusual. It's not something you have every day. The novelty factor means the evaluation takes slightly longer.
And that slight pause is where the sale happens.
That's where the sale happens. Step 4, kiwi juice. By this point, you've evaluated 4 distinct flavor experiences, each one triggering its own sensory memory, and one of them probably landed. Maybe you weren't thinking about kiwi, but now you're picturing that tart green flavor and suddenly you're thirsty in a way you weren't 30 seconds ago.
The mental checklist thing Daniel described. Do I need any of those things?
Right. And contrast that with what happens when you see a sign that says fresh juice. Your brain goes, category, juice, not thirsty, move on. It's processed as a single unit of meaning. There's no checklist because there's nothing to check. A category isn't a list of items. It's a label for a group of items. And labels don't trigger evaluation. They trigger recognition.
Recognition versus evaluation. That's the whole thing in 2 words.
That's the whole thing. Recognition says, I know what that is. Evaluation says, do I want that right now? And evaluation is the precursor to action. Recognition almost never leads to action on its own.
So the generic fruit juices for sale gets recognized and dismissed. The specific list forces evaluation. And the speed prevents you from opting out of the evaluation process.
And there's one more piece I want to add. Each specific juice name also functions as a retrieval cue. When you hear kiwi juice, you're not just evaluating the abstract concept of kiwi-flavored liquid. You're accessing a specific sensory memory, the taste, the temperature, maybe a specific time you had it. That sensory activation creates a kind of momentary craving that an abstract category label can't produce. Fruit juices doesn't make your mouth water. Kiwi juice might.
So, the technique is doing 4 things at once. It's forcing individual evaluation instead of categorical dismissal. It's creating cognitive load that jams the rejection filter. It's triggering sensory retrieval cues. And it's running a mental checklist that the listener can't opt out of.
That's the mechanism. And what I find elegant about it's that none of these pieces work in isolation. If you list the items slowly, the filter catches up. If you list them as a category, no evaluation happens. If you list too many, overload kills the process. The technique is a balanced system that emerged from thousands of vendors competing for attention in the same few seconds of tourist brain space.
You know what this reminds me of. Infomercials.
Say it more.
The classic infomercial structure. They show you the main product, you're sort of interested but not sold, and then the host says, but wait, there's more, and starts listing specific bonuses. A free paring knife, a second nonstick pan, the recipe book. Each bonus is a specific item that triggers its own micro-evaluation. They don't say, you also get bonus kitchen items. They list them, one by one, rapid fire.
And the but wait, there's more, is doing the same thing as the juice vendor's pacing. It's preventing you from reaching a final no decision before all the options have landed. Every time you're about to close the evaluation, another item arrives.
The infomercial is just a juice stall with better lighting.
And a payment plan. So now that we understand why it works, the obvious question is, how do we use this?
Daniel's question exactly. He mentioned professional services, websites, client pitches. Let's go through the applications.
Application 1, and I think the most directly useful, professional services pitches. The standard consultant website says something like, "We provide AI consulting services. That's fruit juices for sale. It's a category label." Your potential client reads it, recognizes it, dismisses it. They're not doing a mental inventory of their AI needs because you haven't given them specific items to check.
So what's the fix?
Instead of AI consulting, U-List. We help companies with AI strategy, model deployment, data pipeline optimization, and team training. Now the client reading that's running four separate evaluations. Do we need AI strategy? Maybe not. Model deployment? Actually, we've been struggling with that. Data pipeline optimization? That's the thing we talked about in last week's meeting. Team training? Not right now. But you've now got them evaluating, not just recognizing.
And one of those probably landed.
One of those probably landed. And even if none of them land perfectly, you've communicated something the generic label doesn't. You do specific, concrete things. You're not a category, you're a list of capabilities. That's more credible.
What about the pacing element? You can't control reading speed on a website.
You can't, and that's a real limitation. The written version of this technique is weaker than the spoken version because you lose the cognitive load effect. But you gain something else. The reader can sit with the list and let the evaluations develop. In some ways, that's better for complex services where the evaluation takes more than a fraction of a second.
So, for a website, you'd want the specific list visible in the Hero section, not hidden in a Services page.
Hero section, above the fold, first thing they see. And I'd argue for a design that presents the items in a sequence, not all at once in a bullet list that the eye can scan and dismiss in half a second. Maybe they appear one at a time with a slight animation delay. You're trying to recreate that rapid-fire sequential processing.
Which is basically what Dana was joking about with the autoplay audio loop. He wasn't entirely serious, but the principle he was reaching for is real.
The principle is real even if autoplay audio is universally hated and would probably get you blacklisted from the internet. Don't do that. But the sequential reveal of specific capabilities? That works.
Let's talk about client meetings and pitches. Daniel mentioned periodically running through your menu during a pitch.
This is where the spoken version really shines because you can control the pacing. In a client meeting, you're already in a high-attention context, so you don't need the cognitive load trick as much. But the specific alternatives effect still applies. When you're describing what you do, don't summarize. Enumerate.
Give me a before and after.
Before, we handle all your marketing needs. After, we handle SEO, content strategy, paid ads, email automation, and conversion rate optimization. Same service, completely different cognitive effect. The first one gets a nod. The second one gets the client mentally checking each item against their current situation. SEO, we have someone doing that, but they're not great. Content strategy, we don't really have one. Paid ads, that's actually what we called you about.
And you learn something from which items they react to.
That's the hidden bonus. When you list specific services and watch the client's face, you see which ones land. They might not say anything, but you'll see a micro expression when you hit the thing they actually need. Now you know where to focus the rest of the conversation.
It's a diagnostic tool disguised as a sales technique.
Which is why I don't buy the criticism that this is manipulative. You're helping someone evaluate options they might otherwise dismiss because their brain took a shortcut. The choice is still theirs. You're just making sure the shortcut doesn't skip over something they'd actually want.
What about email and cold outreach?
Same principle, and this is one where I've seen some compelling before and after examples. The generic cold email says, "We provide data analytics services. Delete." The specific one says, "We help with customer segmentation, churn prediction, revenue forecasting, and AAB testing analysis." Now the recipient is running four evaluations in 3 seconds, and if any of those is a current pain point, you've got their attention.
The reply rate difference would be significant.
In principle, it should be. Each specific term is a hook that might catch something the prospect is actively worrying about. The generic term is a net that's too wide to catch anything. And this connects to something I've noticed about how people read email. They're skimming at extremely high speed, in a mental state that's actually very similar to walking through a crowded market. High distraction, low attention, rapid filtering. The Juustal technique maps almost perfectly.
The market and the inbox are the same environment, cognitively speaking.
They really are. Your brain is doing the same thing in both contexts, trying to filter out irrelevance as fast as possible. The vendor and the cold email are fighting the same battle.
Let's talk about where this breaks. You mentioned the list length limit. What else?
The biggest failure mode is when the items aren't distinct. If you list pomegranate juice, pomegranate mint juice, pomegranate apple juice, pomegranate ginger juice, that's not triggering separate evaluations. That's triggering the same evaluation four times, and the listener tunes out after the second one.
The distinctness of the items is load-bearing.
Completely. Each item needs to access a different mental category. Pomegranate, orange, avocado, kiwi. Those are four very different flavor profiles. If the items blur together, the technique collapses into the same effect as a category label. Your brain goes various pomegranate drinks and dismisses.
What about context? You mentioned high attention versus low attention environments.
In a high attention context, a scheduled one-on-one meeting where the client is sitting across from you, focused, you don't need the rapid-fire pacing. The cognitive load trick is for low attention environments. In a meeting, you can slow down. The specific alternatives effect still works, but you deliver it conversationally. So the areas we typically help with, there's strategy work, model deployment, pipeline optimization, and we do a lot of team training. Same list, natural pace.
The client still runs the checklist.
The mechanism doesn't require speed. Speed just prevents the filter from activating before the list completes. If the filter isn't active because the client is already paying attention, you can take your time.
What about the ethical line? You pushed back on the manipulation charge, but where would you draw it?
I think the line is whether you're helping someone evaluate genuine options or creating a false impression of choice. If the four juices are all the same concentrate from the same bottle with different food coloring, that's fraud. If you're listing services you don't actually provide, that's fraud. But if you offer those distinct things and you're just presenting them in a way that helps the prospect actually consider them, that's good salesmanship. You're working with the brain's natural evaluation processes rather than against them.
The technique doesn't override free choice. It just prevents the choice from being made before the options are even considered.
Right. The default state for most potential customers is not interested. Not because they've evaluated your offering and rejected it, but because they never evaluated it at all. Their brain categorized and dismissed before conscious evaluation could begin. What this technique does is create a window for actual evaluation to happen.
Now that we understand why it works, let's distill this into something listeners can actually use this week.
Framework time. I'm calling this the specific alternatives framework. Here's the core rule. When you want someone to evaluate your offerings, list 3 to 5 specific, distinct options rather than a single category label. That's it. That's the whole thing.
The list forces the mental inventory check.
Takeaway 2. Pace matters. In low attention contexts, deliver the list at a slightly accelerated pace. Not auctioneer speed, but faster than normal conversation. You want the items to land before the dismissal reflex kicks in.
Takeaway 3. Test it. Start with your own website, your email signature, your LinkedIn headline. Wherever you currently have a generic description, replace it with a specific list. Track what happens. Do people engage differently? Do they ask about specific items from the list?
Takeaway 4. Don't overdo it. More than 5 to 7 items and you trigger choice paralysis. Items that are too similar and you lose the distinct evaluation effect. The technique is self-limiting. Respect the limits.
Here's an actionable exercise. Write down your own menu. 4 to 5 specific services or products you offer. Practice delivering it in a rapid-fire sequence. Then test it in a low-stakes conversation. A networking event, a casual meeting, somewhere the stakes are low enough that you can observe the effect without pressure.
Pay attention to which items people react to. That's market research you're getting for free.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a question. Does this technique work differently in written versus spoken form? The Jerusalem vendors shout. But what about a written list on a website? The mechanism suggests the effect should be similar but weaker in writing. You lose the cognitive load from pacing, but you keep the specific alternatives effect.
I think the written version works, but it works differently. In writing, the reader controls the pace, which means they can dismiss items one by one if they choose to. But they can also linger on an item that catches their attention in a way the spoken version doesn't allow. There's a trade-off. The spoken version is better at forcing initial engagement. The written version is better at allowing deeper evaluation once engagement happens.
Which suggests the optimal strategy might be both. A spoken rapid-fire list to capture attention, followed by a written version they can sit with.
That's basically what a good website does. The hero section grabs you with specific options, and the services page lets you go deep on the ones that landed.
Here's a thought. As AI voice assistants become more common, the rapid-fire menu technique could be adapted for voice interfaces. You ask Alexa what services a company offers, and instead of a generic response, you get a specific list delivered at that slightly accelerated pace. The cognitive load effect would work the same way.
That's interesting. Voice interfaces are a high-distraction, low-attention environment, exactly the conditions where the juice stall technique works best. Someone cooking dinner, asking their smart speaker what a company does, half their attention on the stove. A rapid-fire specific list would cut through that in a way a generic description wouldn't.
The thousand-year-old market technique meets the voice interface. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
The mechanism is the same. The brain hasn't changed. The context has.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. Or better yet, try the technique and tell us how it went. We're at myweirdprompts.com.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.